Former Minnesota governor, former pro wrestler, actor, best-selling author Jesse Ventura hosts Aura.tv's Off the Grid, an online-only political talk show with over 3 million views on YouTube. He's also the host of the new podcast We the People with Jesse Ventura. It's a great pleasure to welcome Jesse Ventura back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joel. Thanks for having me.
Always a great pleasure to have you on the program. So you have these two outlets now. One is Off the Grid. The other is We the People with Jesse Ventura. Let us start with Off the Grid. And what ultimately are you trying to do with this show?
Well, I'll give you the background of how it started. I for 8 years now, I've made the choice to live 6 months off the grid, about 1,000 miles into Mexico. And my writing partner, Dick Russell, likewise lives fairly close to me. And so we write books in the winter, and we've written together 5 New York Times bestsellers. And so whenever I would come back in the spring, naturally, when the book would be published, you got to go on a book tour. And so I was on the book tour, and on my schedule was Larry King. And I've known Larry a while, and I thought he'd retired. And I walked in, and there's lights. I said, "Larry, I thought you retired from CNN. He said, "No, I'm with Aura TV on the internet." And I'll always remember, he pointed a finger. He said, "This is where you need to be." So I started talking with Aura TV, and I explained my lifestyle choice, that how could I possibly do a show for them when I live off the grid 6 months out of the year at least. And they told me they have the technology. As long as they have an energy source and access to the satellite, they can do it from anywhere. So then the show morphed into being Off the Grid. And Off the Grid really is a dual meaning. I do the show off the grid for a great part of the year, but it also, off the grid means out of the mainstream. You know, you got the grid, which is, you know, provides us all our electricity. If you're off that grid, then you're not really mainstream. And so really the show has that nuance to it, that you're going to hear me talk about stuff many times that mainstream media won't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because they're controlled. You know, mainstream media is owned by the corporations. The corporations control our elections now, thanks to the Supreme Court decision. I think Mussolini would be very proud of us today. And with the corporate power that we've given over our government and over our lives. And when I work down there, I'm not governed by the FCC. I'm on the internet. I can say anything I want. And I'm not governed by what topics I talk about. They can send me, I have a command center in LA, and they send me the schedules of what the show will be, you know, and I can change it on a whim. If I don't want to talk about that, I can talk about anything I want to talk about. I have total control, which makes it wonderful.
So give me an example of what you would want to talk about. Is it the news of the day? Is it straight news of what's happening in our world?
Yeah, we stay timely. You have to stay timely. You know, we might talk about, I went on a big thing about the Washington nickname, because I find, as a white person, I'm embarrassed that we would use a genocide as an honor, because that's what it is. And, you know, I try to inform people and give them. When I was governor, I had a few people on my staff that told me, "The unique thing about you, governor, is when something happens, you sometimes see it in a unique way that isn't apparent to the general public until you bring it to light." And so I just look at subjects and apply my unique way to them, and I many times give you a little bit of difference of what you'll receive from, you know, mainstream media reporting. I might give you a different angle on it.
So let's use the Washington Redskins name as an example for a moment, because here is a controversy which I find fascinating, because you have a team, you have an organized sport, and so many people have come out and have there have been people who have supported the name as well, but the it seems overwhelming majority of people have called for the team to change it. They have flat out said that they won't. So often we see, when there is pressure put on organizations, that they give in. Why have we not seen a give in this case?
Well, because the National Football League is probably one of the most powerful things in this country today. And they probably are arrogant enough to think they don't have to. It's not new. If you go to Washington in the NBA, they had a team there a number of years ago called the Washington Bullets. And they found Bullet to be so offensive that they now changed them to the Wizards. I find Redskin way more offensive than Bullet. I've had Native Americans tell me that being called, let me simplify it for you. Could you, as an individual, could you, Joe, walk up to four Native Americans, say 25 years of age, that you didn't know in northern Minnesota, and say to them, hey, Redskins, come over here?
No.
No, you couldn't, could you?
No.
That answers the question right there. They would find, they determine what's offensive, not some billionaire owner who owns a football team and says he's honoring them. How do you honor someone with genocide? I saw a copy of the Winona, Minnesota paper from, I think, 1863, where Governor Alexander Ramsey of Minnesota had raised the bounty to $200 for every Redskin you could send to purgatory. So they don't even get heaven or hell, and you can go out and murder them for $200. And in 1863, $200 was probably worth about $20,000 today, don't you think? In today's dollars?
Yeah.
Well, that's what we're honoring. We're honoring that we could go out and arbitrarily commit murder on men, women, and children, and the way you collected your bounty, you brought back a lock of hair and some of their red skin. That's why they were called Redskins. It doesn't make it right simply because John Wayne said it.
You know, on another issue, and something that I guess is an issue that we have been battling for so long, and yet nothing substantive has come out of it, and that is the issue of immigration. And the president has decided that he's going to take a look at this and act in his power to do this, and there's great question as to whether he does actually have that power and to make the changes that he wants to make. I'm curious as to your thoughts on the issue overall, especially living in Mexico part-time, of what you make of the issue and also of the president's power and what we're saying about that, of what power a president has.
Well, first of all, he's not new at doing this. George H.W. Bush did an executive thing on immigration, and so did Ronald Reagan. I think it's far more political. It just happens to be a Democrat, so the Republicans are raising hell about it. Immigration, I'm biased. I choose to live in Mexico over half the year. I love the Mexican people. I love the lifestyle down there, so I'm not the person to ask. But look at our history. We're supposed to be a country of immigrants. We all are. Unless you're Native American, you immigrated here. Now, we've persecuted every group that came here. The Irish got persecuted. The Italians got persecuted. The Jews got persecuted. Now it just happens to be the Mexicans. They're on the list. And I think everybody needs to look in the mirror and remember what this great country is about. This country is a great experiment of immigration, of all nationalities and people from all over the world coming to this one nation, black, white, yellow, red, whatever you might be, and all living together and getting along together. And it seems to me utterly ridiculous. And, you know, when you got people talking about family values, and yet they want to divide up families because kids that are born here are automatically citizens, but yet will ship their parents home.
Jesse Ventura is our guest, and we're talking about his shows Off the Grid and We the People with Jesse Ventura. How is We the People different than Off the Grid?
Well, it's different. It's more intimate. It's a podcast. When I do Off the Grid, it's 10 to 12 minutes of Jesse getting to be Jesse the Wrestler without Mean Gene and the mic on any subject I want. I try to entertain. I make it fun. I make my hard-hitting points and all of that. The We the People is more intimate. Like the latest one I did, it's me having roughly a 30 to 45 minute conversation with people. And the last one I did is a phenomenal. Imagine this: Jesse the Body Ventura and Donald Trump.
There you go.
And but it came off well because I've known Donald for a number of years now. We're friends. And the reason it works is, and it did work, is that Donald and I may differ on subject matter, on many things. We may agree on many things, but we have mutual respect for each other. And when you have mutual respect, you should always be able to have a pretty decent conversation, even if there are disagreements.
We expect from both of you to speak your mind. Do you feel that there is not enough of that, of people speaking out?
Yeah, absolutely there's not. If you speak out now against your government, you're considered radical and unpatriotic. I think it's the opposite. I think you're supposed to hold your government's feet to the fire. Our forefathers told us we had to be engaged, vigilant citizens for this thing to work. And by being engaged and vigilant means you hold your elected officials to the fire. You protest when you need to. That's why they gave us the First Amendment to legal. Here's a question I have that ties in with Ferguson right now. You want to hear this one? Here's what you'll get on Off the Grid.
All right.
Here's what you'll get. Here's my take. How is it that we sign treaties that ban chemical weapons? We will not use chemical weapons against our enemy, but we will use them against our own citizens when they exercise their First Amendment rights.
And
wait a minute, think of that. We use chemical weapons on our own people, but we won't use them on the enemy, even though we do, because we've been using napalm since Vietnam, and that's a chemical weapon. But we actually signed treaties stating we will not use chemical weapons at war, but yet we will use chemical weapons on demonstrations within our own country, on our own citizens. How are our own citizens less than a foreign enemy?
Do you feel that we should categorize tear gas as a chemical weapon?
What is it? You can't use it in war. You can't use tear gas in war. It's a chemical weapon. I've been in tear gas. I've seen napalm. I've also been waterboarded. It's torture. Dick Cheney may call it enhanced interrogation. Trust me, Dick, with 5 deferments from the military. It is torture. I've been waterboarded. Absolutely, tear gas is a chemical weapon. What do you think it's made out of? Chemicals.
Right.
And it causes a reaction. You can't breathe. You inhale it. Your eyes run. You have to go to the doctor. You have to go see the physician and go to a hospital to get help if you've been hit with it. We can't use it at war, but we can use it on our own people. See, that's what you'll get on Jesse Ventura's Off the Grid. You'll hear things that you won't hear mainstream media talk about.
So that mainstream media, look at CNN. CNN was covering the Ferguson situation after the grand jury opinion was read. And they're on the ground. Their reporters were getting tear gassed with the protesters as well. My question is and was, how much of that is the media, of people acting because the media expects them to, because they are there and pointing a camera at them?
I don't know. I that's a difficult question to answer. I don't know. You would need to go interview the protesters and find out if that's what inspired them, if they knew they'd be covered. And so that's why you can't ask me that. I'm not there. I don't know what has motivated that. But, you know, certainly people do protest to try to bring attention. That's why you protest. You want to bring attention to something. I personally think they should have indicted. They could have saved all this trouble. And here's why I think they should have indicted on a manslaughter or something. Then we'll learn the truth. Then it will get in court where there will be lawyers on both sides and evidence will be submitted in a courtroom. Now we will never know the truth because there was no cross-examination. There was no evidence admitted at all. And what you got is a he said, she said thing. And the only way to resolve that is in a court of law in our system. And that's why I'm opposed to them not indicting. I felt they should have indicted simply because it was so controversial. It's the only way the truth will come out will be in a courtroom.
I want to get your thoughts on just a couple of other subjects, and one being post-election of the midterms as we head into the new year. Where do you think we are with a Republican takeover of the Senate? And given your political background, do you think there'll really be any difference?
Well, first of all, here's where we are. Go back to 00 and 06 when Republicans had the presidency in both houses. The largest attack in U.S. history happened on their watch. We got involved in multiple wars. The economy went down the tubes and was totally wrecked by 06. And here's the part that concerns me the most. Whenever Republicans get in charge, science comes to a grinding halt. In 00 to 06, they stopped stem cell research. Well, get ready, because now we're going to be governed by spirituality instead of science. We'll be governed by prayer. And I got news for you. Prayer ain't going to get the job done.
If you had to make predictions for 2016, what would it be?
Well, they're opening the door for me. look at the results of the midterms. What was it, a 36% voting nationally?
Yes.
Okay, that means I've got a pot of 64% out there that they've alienated to the point they won't even vote. So if I inspire, that gives me the great majority. If I inspire a percentage of that 64 to come out, and you know I'm going to steal from their existing 36, I know it for a fact by what happened in Minnesota. Minnesota actually leads the nation in voter turnout with a pathetic 50%. But it's 14 points higher than national, so my pot would be 14% larger to draw from. That's how I won in Minnesota. They predicted a 50% voter turnout. I was polling 27%. It ended up 60, and I got 37. Those extra 10% came out and all voted for me. So they're setting the table. If I wanted to make a run in 2016, because they've alienated the people so bad, and I will tell you this. I will tell you right now what I'd run on one issue. You know what it would be?
What?
I would offer the United people of the United States of America the opportunity to make history with me and elect the first president since George Washington, the father of our country, who does not belong to a political party. I think you could win on that alone.
But then you still, and I assume, because we've talked about this, but then you still have to deal with the confines of the system, as you did in Minnesota.
But sure you do, but if you're the top dog, it gives you certain advantages within the system, don't it?
Well, it does.
And they have to deal with you. See, I view it the opposite way. I don't have to deal with them. They have to deal with me.
So that brings up the question of, is that a job that you want?
No, it is not. It is not. But I'm a patriotic American, and here's what's always in the back of my mind. This is the lingering voice in my head that never leaves me. And it's this simple. If not me, then who?
Yeah.
That's what I fight with, because I love my life right now, and I need the American people to show me it's worth it. They got to stand up with me. In Minnesota, after I won, there was this kind of laissez-faire attitude. Oh, the big guy's in there now. He'll take care of everything. And you don't realize you must have the people. They have to stay vigilant and stay with you, because that's the only thing the Democrats and Republicans understand.
So here's a scenario. Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, Jesse Ventura. Election day, you come out with what percentage of the vote?
Well, if they allow me in the debates and they allow me total ballot access in all 50 states, I'm the winner.
Yeah.
And I always live by, I've beat them twice. They haven't beat me yet, and they've double-teamed me both times I've ran. And I always take the attitude, it's a simple one. If I can debate them, I can beat them, because they have so much baggage. Look at this. I don't run against the candidates. I run against the parties, because it's the parties who run the candidates anyway on them. And they have a $17 or $18 trillion in debt now. How do they run from that? They've been in charge for 150 years. You notice I lumped them together.
Yeah. So let's wrap up by asking the simple question is, I mean, how serious are you? When will you make a decision if you're going to run or not?
Well, the logical decision would be to go to the Libertarian Party and get an agreement that I will run under their name, but that I have the freedom to be able to say that nobody controls me. And I think the Libertarians would do it, because Libertarian means liberty. And so I don't think they'd care to have a control over me the way Democrats and Republicans would. They would give me my liberty. That to me is the only way to do it now, because the libertarians, I think, have ballot access to all 50 states. If they don't, it's close. Well, they don't hold their convention until June of 2016. So you have to go there to their convention, get nominated, and then you're on the ballot. Then it would be a matter of rising up to forcing them, the Dems and Repubs, to allow me to debate, because they control it. You saw in 92, Ross Perot got 1 out of 5 votes, and yet in 96, he wasn't allowed to debate. Well, here's what happened. In 92, the debates were run by the National League of Women Voters, essentially a neutral group. In 96, the government took it away from the National League of Women Voters, the Dems and Repubs, and they formed the Federal Debate Commission, which is headed by two of their former Republican and Democratic heads. So they took control of the debates from a neutral party, and that's how they were able to not allow Perot to debate in 96. And nobody said anything about it. The lemmings of this country sat back and accepted the fact that Perot got 30-some million of our dollars because of what he did in 92, and that they weren't allowed to hear somebody who got literally 20% of the vote.
Well, if you make an announcement, don't forget your friends. Come on and talk about it, okay?
All right, and I'll finish with this.
Yes.
We all love to knock Cuba, right?
Yeah.
But Cuba has elections. They just, Fidel's the only name. Wow. We pick, the elites pick two candidates here, and we get an extra choice. We'll always remember what Jerry Garcia, the Grateful Dead, said. If you're made to pick the lesser of two evils, you're still picking evil.
Jesse Ventura is the man behind Off the Grid on Aura.tv. You can check it out at Aura.tv/WeThePeople, or also go to YouTube.com/JesseVentura, YouTube.com/JesseVentura, and find it there. Jesse, thank you very much. Always great to have you on the program.
Always a pleasure to be here. Keep up the good work. We'll do it again.
Thanks very much. I look forward to it. Again, Jesse Ventura hosts Off the Grid on Aura.tv, and also We the People with Jesse Ventura, and you can find both at YouTube.com/JesseVentura. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.